Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Time to elaborate. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I want to welcome you and hope that if you're here for the first time, you will be enjoying the next hour, because what we do here in the Labridge is we're here to celebrate, enlighten, and serve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. So we get together here once a week. We select our favorite easy chair, and we pretend or imagine that we're back on the island. Whether you're a beach person, a backyard person, a veranda person, or a front, whatever, you, wherever you used to relax, under the tree, in a hammock, in the living room, in an easy chair, we ask you to just sit back, relax, as we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve some of our memories and discover some new things about our culture. So this evening, I am very, very excited because I have discovered a lot of new things that I'm going to be sharing. So I hope that our listeners online and on the board will enjoy the chat or the Labridge. And whenever you want to participate, because remember, if you're from Jamaica, you know what a Labridge is. And if you're not, for our visitors or just people who love Jamaica or people coming by to learn about the country and the culture, a Labridge is just a relaxed conversation. We are not ever politically correct. And because we're here to celebrate and enlighten, we do it in a very relaxed way. Excuse me. And I must apologize because I'm still recuperating from a little bout with something. But today is my best day, so I am feeling on top of the world, but I still ask you to bear with me if I have to take a deep breath or, you know, I'm coughing a little. So if you're on my list, you know that we're on a new path for the next perhaps couple of weeks, because through the work of Dr. Joy Lumsden, and she has discovered some other people's work that I will be sharing with you this evening, we are being enlightened about the famous Jamaican composers. For the next couple of weeks, we'll be talking about different artists all in the realm of classical music. Now, most people of this generation and all over the world, and perhaps even older, not older than me, but when I say the now generation, I'm talking about the young folks. Jamaican artists, they'll perhaps think of one of the reggae or the, whatever the new music is, those kind of artists. But we do have classical artists that are currently performing all over the world. So I'm going to be talking about three or four of them today who even operated and composed and were popular way before our time. And I'm a senior, and a lot of my listeners or and fans are in my sort of age group or grew up in Jamaica before independence, so they can relate to what I'm saying. Now, the first person I'm going to talk about is a gentleman by the name of Samuel Felsted. And I'm going to read directly from an article about that, him. Now, Samuel Felsted's parents, who were originally from England, had married in Philadelphia in 1741. They soon left Pennsylvania and came to live in Jamaica. The older Felsted was in the iron trade and played the organ and shared the musical interests of the rest of the family. With the rest of the family, Samuel. And Samuel was born in 1743. I mean, I can't hardly even wrap my mind about that around that. In Jamaica, he was born in Jamaica and presumably received a good education, which provided the foundation for his adult interests in botany, art, poetry, and music. He was also described as an inventor, and an 8-page manuscript records the plan and description of a horizontal wheel that he invented in 1798. But today, we're going to be talking about his musical accomplishments. Now, he was possibly taught to play the organ by Samuel Patch, a Kingston organist, and John Raymond, who was the organist in Port Royal. He became the organist at the St. Andrew Parish Church, and a lot of Jamaicans, especially Kingstonians, know exactly where that is and can relate to that church. And he probably was in his 20s. When he held the post as the organist at the St. Andrew's Parish Church in 1783. He then held the same post at the Kingston Parish Church after the death of the previous organist, who may well have been Samuel Patch. Now, Felsted himself died in 1802, and nothing further seemed to be recorded of his personal life or career. Now, this man's significance lies in the work he composed in Jamaica around 1773 to 74, while he was an organist at the St. Andrew Parish Church. His oratorio, Johann, was the first oratorio written in the Americas. And its rediscovery created a great deal of interest in the music world. And he was discovered or rediscovered by a Dr. Howard Smitzer, and he's the world's premier author on the oratorio. And he has documented the unique position of Felsted's work. And there is something published, which was published in 1987, and the name of that piece that this man published is The History of the Oratorio. So he apparently discovered him. Now, I have a accomplished, well, someone that's very versed in this kind of music as one of my loyal fans to the Backyard. And for me and a lot of other people that might not know exactly what an oratorio is, I'm going to ask him to give us a rundown on how he would describe it. I know it's a musical score or whatever it's called. So now I'm going to open up the mic to 718-379 and ask my fan to introduce himself to the world, the audience, and my fans, and explain to us what an oratorio is. The mic is open.
This is Lay from the Bronx. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Right. Just one correction, though, that Felsted, his work was Jonah.
Jonah.
J-O-N-A-H.
Okay, sorry. Thank you. I stand corrected. You're right.
Mm-hmm. And, an oratorio. Well, let's put this in perspective. In the age of the Renaissance, and you know, as Jamaicans, anything happens in one part of the world, Jamaica follows soon after.
Isn't that exciting?
Yes. So the Renaissance historically was in progress from the period of the 14th to the 17th century. So now we're talking the early part of the 17th century when this fella, Samuel Felsted, wrote his oratorio. And the oratorio is basically a choral work. An unusual scriptural subject consisting chiefly of recitative arias, a chorus, without any action. If you're familiar with opera,
right.
This is like an opera without action or scenery. It's just the musical aspect of it. And this is very unusual. I mentioned the Renaissance, that Jamaica is going through its own Renaissance, both musically, artistically, around this, let's say, 100 years after the Renaissance ended in Europe.
Mm.
So that's how it fits into to the perspective that we're looking at. And the other thing is that oratorios were a substitute. It was mostly religious when it first started in the early part of the 17th century. And it first started when the church, the Catholic Church, would not allow music, certain kinds of music, which was opera. In those days, opera was like our, even our reggae of this day. So, mm-hmm. In other words, during Lent, they didn't allow operas, but they allowed oratorios.
Mm.
So it would take the place of the opera, so to speak, and it would be performed essentially in churches. But fast forward now to today, and even at the latter part of the 17th century, when this piece, the Jonah, was written, the oratorio was fast becoming secularized.
Mm-hmm.
But even till this day, the secularization really didn't mean that the texts of the oratorio would be anything more than religious.
I got you. Okay.
So you find that the works by Monteverdi, Handel, of course, mention Handel because everyone knows the Messiah.
Uh-huh.
And they hear it even now. And that's an oratorio.
Oh,
so now
okay.
You know what an oratorio is.
Right. Now, this is from an article that relates to the now, so I will read it. This was the article written in 1987 by the same man who discovered this oratorio. He said, it was a matter of some surprise that the first oratorio written in the Americas was produced by a hitherto unknown Jamaican composer in an island now known primarily for the music of Bob Marley. However, the work points to a Jamaica that then featured much more prominently on the world scene as the most valuable of Britain's colonies, and as able to support a level of music and theatrical activity that could attract the interest of metropolitan performers. The only other work of Samuel Felsted so far discovered, and this was discovered by a Sister Mary Dominique Ray, who is the former American Music Research, she was at the former American Research Center here in the United States, are six other pieces for the organ that he composed. So, I mean, I think the significance here that is being recorded is that it was the first in the Americas, and it just happens to be from a place like Jamaica, you know, which is sort of, to the people now, sort of a contrast. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah,
but I thought that was interesting. Now, here is another piece that was written by Valerie Facey, who apparently they had some function in 1990 in Jamaica when this piece was made public, or after it was made public, that it was, you know, it originated on the island. And this is reading from the program that was circulated at that time. Jamaica has a rich and varied historical heritage influenced by the many ethnic groups which have graced her shores and shared their distinctive style of artistry and social expression. From the time of the original Arawak Indians to the arrival of Columbus in 1492, followed by 161 years of Spanish influence, and finally the conquest by the British in 1655, an amazing groundwork was laid. Within a remarkably short period, Jamaica became a colony of importance and wealth, accompanying both the voluntary and involuntary immigrants and indigenous cultures of Europe and Africa who came to the now flourishing and fashionable island, where they melted and blossomed into a unique culture all its own. I had to read that piece because I think it is so descriptive in what Jamaica is or used to be. I'm talking about the Jamaica I grew up in, where, you know, everything just sort of melted. And even apparently in the early days, no matter where a person came from, their parents came from, if they took their first breath in Jamaica, they were a Jamaican. And I'm sure it's still that way now. You see where I'm going with this, Lay?
Yes, well, you have to realize that, you know, Jamaica was, if I'm going to say, quote-unquote, cultured from, even from an earlier period, because there was always, I was looking at my history notes.
Earlier than when?
1682, they had a repertory company, public theater in Jamaica.
Yes, I was just going to read that now. Yes, public theater is documented in 1682. Horse racing was in 1687.
Right. And then people, you know, companies were coming down from all over the world to perform in Kingston and Spanish mm-hmm. Town in the 1750s.
Right.
This is akin to, in our time, we used to go to Carib and we get people coming in from, you know, all over the world to perform at
Carib. There.
Yeah.
And it was considered like a feather in the cap.
Yeah.
In years even before our time to have performed in Kingston,
yeah.
And in Jamaica,
yeah.
And one week we're going to do the early, you know, Ward Theatre and it's when it came into its own, because I was reading a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
That a lot of the Broadway stars and other people, you know, they would use it as a billing, you know. Just coming out of Jamaica.
And by the way, I read a little about this Dr. Thurston Dox.
Right.
Who did most of the research on Samuel Felsted. And he did some research. He went to London and discovered the original.
And
the printed copy dated 1775 that this guy wrote. This is the original score of the oratorio that he wrote.
Right, and that's
unusual.
That started the whole research.
Yeah.
Interesting, very interesting, because it was in England for 200 years.
That's right. We're talking 273 years ago, you know.
Right, right, right. Well, I was counting the time before I was born. That's only 200 years.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying that.
Right, right. No, I'm just making light of it.
This is a very distinguished fella here.
Oh, very distinguished, I think. And it was, but I was not aware that there were some, you know, recognition. And actually, there was a performance, apparently, of this work in 1990.
Uh-huh.
Because that's why when this was from a program note that I found on Dr. Lumsden's website. And for our visitors or someone coming by later to listen to the show, Dr. Joy Lumsden has several websites up, but if you just Google her name or go to all my pages, I think it's Jam Joy is her pages. But if you Google Dr. Joy Lumsden, you'll find a lot of information about the historical documentation that she has that has to do with early Jamaica. And we are just so grateful for her because, you know, so many things have come to light to me. And I'm sure people that grew up around the time I did, where we didn't have all this information at our fingertips, never even know it existed, I am always very excited and excited to share. So I hope that the listeners will enjoy it as much as I do, and my loyal fans. So, Leigh, is there anything you'd like to say about this Mr. Felsted?
Well, as I said, he was a very distinguished organist in his own right, but the fact that he would write an oratorio is one big thing, but he's distinguished by the fact that he wrote the first oratorio.
Ah, that's what I mean.
In the Americas.
Uh-huh, and there's so many things that seem to be Jamaica was always the first. I remember we talked about the first this and the first that several times.
Yeah.
And so this is just another one.
This is a biggie.
This is really a biggie.
Yeah.
And
we would not have known about this because I was looking at some background here, and people had programs by Felsted in Boston and Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And
no mention was made?
Mention of the source.
Right. And, well, Vary goes on to say, in the latter half of the 18th century, it could be referred to as the Jamaican Renaissance.
Yeah.
And it was in this climate of learning, science, and the elite high living that Samuel Felsted grew up in Jamaica.
Yeah.
Errol Hill in the Jamaican Stage, which was a piece that was written in 1655, between 1655 and 1900, quotes John Stuart writing of 1808 as saying that there had been no theatrical performance for about 25 years, but that in Kingston there are occasional tolerable concerts, the principal performance in which are, this was very interesting, French immigrants from Saint Santo Domingo, the French refugees, and presumably their black and colored slaves had to use their performing skills to earn a living, because they were refugees, I suppose. In view of the high level of musical performance before the revolution, where they were coming from, one may well think that the refugees from that colony were somewhat less than impressed by the Jamaican Renaissance. And this was, a man writing, one of the critics, let's call him a critic, he was John Stuart, writing about that in 1808. So the point I want to make here is that there were black slaves performing. Isn't that interesting?
Well, they were making some extra money.
Well,
and, there were always there is talent everywhere you go. I was listening only today to another program. It has nothing to do with what you're talking about, but. The Japanese who were here, you may have heard it on the radio.
Right, I heard it on the news this morning.
They were so talented,
right.
Even though they were corralled into these concentration camps.
Well, you know what I heard from that story? That
yeah.
Their talent came out after they were corralled.
Yes.
A lot
yes.
of them were not artists by trade.
And they were right, and they were not necessarily educated people.
Right. No, some of them were. They were doctors and lawyers and farmers and shopkeepers. But the point I'm trying to make here, Leah, I was just touched by that story this morning, too, because a museum is opening in Washington.
Okay.
Two things stood out to me on that story. Number one, this descendant of a Japanese, one of the people who were in the camp,
mm-hmm.
after 9/11 is when she got the inspiration and the passion to start the research. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
And, you know, she started by coming up, she came up with something from her grandparents, I think, that was stored in a garage, in a box. And when she found out how precious it was, she decided to research and find other families, descendants, you know, of those people.
So this undervalidates what you say from week to week that,
right.
You know, if we go back to our grandparents, our grandaunts, and get information,
uh-huh.
you know,
uh-huh.
you never know what you're going to dig up.
Right. And that there's always something inspiring in even the most hideous situation.
Yeah.
You know, is my point. That, and I believe that we know, or even, I'm not even thinking I'm no, but the younger generation can get so much inspiration from stories like that and making the connection. Because these people must have been under a lot of pressure. It's funny, as I was hearing the news this morning, you know what thoughts came to me, Leigh?
Uh-huh.
What if, you know, as long as we've been here, what if something similar, and they quarantined all the people of any country, Jamaica, you know, that's where we are from, and put us in a situation like that? Can you just wrap your mind around that? They had no furniture. They had nothing. They just had cots in the barracks. They had to go out into the wild and become industrious and make things out of what they found around them. Did you hear that part of the story?
Yeah, I heard it.
Oh, man. To me, it was just so meaningful. It was, you know, I could make the connection. You know, what if it was me? But
strange things happen in strange places, and in my own oratorio, I find out and marvel every day. You know, you have a lot of retired people in the oratorio, and the talent that we have 130 people in the oratorio, and you know, we write a newsletter. And when you find out, we hunt down who is amongst these 130 people and write bios on them. And you can't imagine the talent and what people retired, what kind of careers they had and stuff like that, in just this one little place.
Right.
So, you know, there is talent amongst people, and especially the older folks who, they weren't able to express this before. So here
well,
it is coming
actually,
out now with these
a lot of times things, talent is brought out under pressure. I remember interviewing the poet. And on the she writes poetry, you know, for Jamaica. I mean, about Jamaica, and she's a no time Miss Louise Bennett.
Yeah, I remember that. The lady in
Canada, right? And I remember that she started writing under extreme pressure because she was so frustrated, and that is how her talent was ignited. And I'm bringing these little things out to hopefully our listeners now or later can sort of relate to it and know that, you know, sometimes when we are stressed is when we can do something positive, take action and do something. So now I'm going to talk about another period, which was this particular Jewish man, he became a knight. I mean, he was knighted. Sir Frederick Haman Cowen, Cowen, he was formerly a Cohen, but somewhere along the line, the name was changed. Well, he was born, let me see. Now, he was born in Kingston, Jamaica, in January of 1852 at the house at numbered 90 Duke Street at the corner of Charles Street. You know, in the old days, I suppose that's how they used to write the birth certificates, you know, with details of the exact house, because I'm looking at, I happened to find some of the old certificates I had after the fire, and I'm amazed at the information on it. So this is saying that he was born on January 29th, 1852, at the house at present numbered 90 Duke Street, southeast corner of Charles Street. At the age of 4, he was taken to England, where his father had become treasurer of the opera of Her Majesty Drury Lane Theatre. I suppose that's the name of the theatre. And private secretary to the Earl of Dooley. Now, he started to show his remarkable aptitude for music from an early age. He composed a waltz when he was six and an operetta entitled Gabriella at eight and a symphony at 17. He was educated in London and studied music under Sir Julius Benedict, a Jew, and a composer with Sir John Goss. Now, he continued his musical studies at the conservatory in Berlin and having another master as one of his teachers. Now, his first public appearance when he was about 9 years of age was an accompanist to a singer who sang one of his songs that he wrote. Isn't that something? At that age? And his first public recital as a pianist was when he was 11. Now, since 1869, his claims as a composer has been generally acknowledged. He is the composer of many songs, some of which have become very popular. And, you know, and they have different things here that he wrote. It is unbelievable. Three different Scandinavian, among them was a symphony, number three, and in parentheses it says Scandinavia. So I suppose that's the name of the symphony. And he has had great success. This is an article written. He wrote just several, numerous. Now, he was apparently educated, and he wrote oratorios, too, several overtures and oratorios. He was educated at the University of Cambridge and the University of Edinburgh, where he got a music degree. In February 1918, he was appointed professor at the Guildhall School of Music. He received the honors of knighthood in 1911 on the coronation of King George V. Ain't that something? Now, on January 1st, 1934, he completed a new work for full orchestra, founded on Longfellow's poem about a magic cup. And the piece was called The Luck of Eden Hall. Now, his parents, Cowen, which is his new name, C-O-W-E-N, no, his old name, represents the new and promising school of composition which has sprung up in England in recent times, a type of music not ultra-modern but still full of an increasing freedom while yet retaining enough of the old classic forms to take a stronger hold. So, in other words, what they're saying here, he was like composing contemporary classic. And he was very popular. He was summoned to Australia as a conductor in 1888. In 1889, he was one of the examiners of the Faculty of Music of the London University. I mean, this man is so accomplished. And this is, incidentally, Dr. Lumsden has approximately, I would say, 20 or 25 of these people. Now, some of them that I will discuss another week are currently composing or performing all over the world. And I don't know, Leigh, if you might be familiar with some of the names. I'll have one or two of them when I'm finished with this one. But I thought this was quite interesting because there are several articles about him, but it went on to say that for some reason, although he had a Jewish name and his father had this special job, they were apparently quite affluent because he, you know, his father was commissioned or got the job from Jamaica and then went to England to perform this job. So more or less, I suppose, that it mentioned here that he would be considered privileged because he got the best education and apparently traveled well. They have it, he was summoned to Australia, as I told you. And in 1929, after an absence from the island of 73 years, Sir Frederick returned to visit. Were you born then, Leigh?
No.
That was a joke. Yeah. He was presented.
Well, you know, he, of course, he's as we would say, a Jamaican Jew.
Right.
And the word Cohen is a corruption of C-O-H-E-N as well.
Right, right. Well, they have different versions of the spelling of his name in these articles. But he was, in 1929, when he returned to Jamaica, he was presented at the Institute of Jamaica that afternoon with two addresses. One from the Board of Governors and another accompaniment by a souvenir in a form of a manuscript music holder made of the native wood maho. You know that wood from Jamaica. And it was inlaid with different types of wood. Satin wood, and it had a silver plate that was cut to represent Jamaica. Have you ever heard of him?
Yes.
I'm just curious because you are a musical person and perhaps know a little bit about classical music history. But have you heard of this particular man?
Yes, I have.
Oh, so you're familiar with him. Not familiar, but you knew of him.
Yeah.
Oh, how did you get exposed to him?
I was looking at the page with, you know, popular classical people born in Jamaica.
Oh.
And I came up with several of the names, but there is one of them that I think I mentioned to you that, did you know him? And his name is amongst the group. And I was so proud because I went to school with him.
Right, right. We're going to talk about him another day. But what I mean, prior to this, did you hear about this man, Cohen?
No, I didn't know of him prior.
Oh, I see. Because this is what I'm trying to find out. If I am the one that is sort of not with it, or if the average, there's no average, but I mean, a lot of Jamaicans don't know about these people.
Oh, well, you see, you know, not to make any concessions for us Jamaicans not knowing about these people, most of them, after they become prominent in music, they go away. And some of them never return, or some of them go away for extended periods of time, like this fellow we're talking about. And they
mm-hmm.
do that as in the music business. That's what composers do. They don't stay in the place of their birth for long. They go, and that's how they gain experience in the world of music.
Right, right.
So this is what he did. I'm glad he came back.
Yeah, he returned. I mean, I'm sure he's no longer with us. It doesn't say when he died, but. He apparently was from a prominent Jewish family. And he had a brother, Lionel was the brother's name, and he was born in 1846. And he was a member of the Royal Society of British Artists, a painter of considerable ability. He frequently exhibited at the Royal Academy. He died at sea in 1895, while on his way home from some other country, where he had been for several years engaged in the practice of his art. So apparently they were scattered all over the world. No, it does say here that the musician one died in London in 1935, which is the year I was born. So I found that very interesting that, you know, a lot of these things, well, it's because of the internet. It's because of the technology that we have now. You know, because if, even if this information was at the library in Jamaica, I mean, I wouldn't have access to it unless it was online. You get my point? So there are several lessons that we seniors have to learn from all of this, is that embracing the technology is wonderful. And I read something the other day that, you know, we should all be learning something new every single day. That's the one way to keep the brain activity at its peak. It's not just for the kids in school, but it's for the adults too. And I guess I might get some extended years because I'm learning something, more than one thing every day just by doing this research. And I encourage my peers to get in the mode, get in the game of learning something new every day. My passion just happens to be the history of Jamaica. But I am sure whatever your passion is, you can learn something new about it. Right, Mr. Lake?
Yes, absolutely.
And with that said, I'd like to invite anybody else on the board that would like to join the Labrish to hit 1 on your telephone, and I will know that you're raising your hand like you're a kid in school. In the backyard here, sometimes we pretend we're kids. And for the people listening online, I'm sorry I'm not able to interact with you unless you call in at 718-766-4558, and then you can join the Labrish. But now I want to talk about another artist because it connects to one of the something we did some time ago, and that happens to be a popular show online too. And I'm going to now talk about Mr. Noel DeCosta. Don't we know that name, Lace? Very popular name in Jamaica. He was born in Nigeria in 1929, but his parents were Salvation Army missionaries from Jamaica. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Because we did the history of the Salvation Army as it related to Jamaica some time ago. So here, some missionaries that were Jamaicans, that, you know, the Salvation Army was started by an ex-slave and an Englishman. And here is this Jamaican couple taking off to Nigeria as army officers. And there, Noel was born. Now, he was encouraged by his parents to study music, and he went to Jamaica as a child and received his early education. At age 11, he was taken to New York, where he continued his studies. In 1952, he obtained his BA in music from Queens College, New York City. At Columbia University, where he studied with Otto Luing and Jack Beeston, he obtained his master's in theory and composition. While still studying at Columbia, he received a fellowship in music composition, and later on a Fulbright scholarship, he studied with in Italy, in Florence, Italy. Now, he taught at Hampton University and City University, New York, before going in 1970 to Rutgers University, where he taught until his retirement in 2001. He was associate professor of music at the Mason Gross School of Art at Rutgers. Ain't that something? Now, much of DeCosta's work reflects his interest in Africa, West Indies, and his work more or less reflects Afro-American folk tradition. His work includes two pieces for unaccompanied cello, which and that piece is called Blue Mix, and Silver Blue. Three short pieces for alto flute. You know that instrument, Leigh?
Yes.
Alto flute?
Yes.
I thought it is only one kind of flute.
No.
Oh, how much music I know.
But, that, you know, it's unusual right off the bat that he's doing for a string instrument, the cello, and also for a wind instrument, the flute.
That's talent
to
you.
Yeah, so that's pretty good.
Right. He wrote a piece for violin.
Mm.
Oh my goodness. He was described as described as a remarkable blend of percussion and organ featuring African rhythms and melodies. I think I'd love to hear one of his pieces. Besides his work as a composer, he was an accomplished violinist and choral conductor. He was the founding member of the Society of Black Composers, which promotes the performance of music by African-American composers. Noel DeCosta died in New York on June 8, 2002, at the age of 72. So, although I don't know what I would call him because he was a Jamaican, from Jamaican parents, born in Nigeria, and they sent him or he went to Jamaica for his early education. So, I call the children of Jamaican parents here Jamaicans, and I call them in Britain, Jabrits. I mean, I make up my own name, you know, just to get the Jamaican in there. So I have to come up with something for people born in Nigeria of Jamaican parents. And I see a 404-298 that would like to join the Labrish. Good evening.
Margaret.
You have Margaret in the backyard. Who do I have?
Margaret, this is Annette Scott. I've been listening to you for the last 20 minutes, and since I'm not a music person, I've just been listening in. But
oh!
I was curious to hear what this alto flute is all about. Will the guest please describe what it is?
Well, you know, most of these instruments are, you have like you've heard of a tenor sax and an alto sax. And a sax. It's the same thing is for a flute. They're tuned in a certain register.
Okay.
And that brings the flute in. Which one are we talking about again? I forget.
Alto flute.
Alto.
Yeah,
alto.
The register.
ALTO. Uh-huh.
Okay.
The register would be just think of your voice, either a soprano or an alto. The alto is a little lower than the soprano.
So special notes have to be written for that?
Well, if you score for each instrument, yes.
Oh, interesting.
It's the same as if, you know, you have a violin, which is a much lighter sound, and then you have a viola, which is a little heavier tone for a violin.
Right.
Then you have the cello, which is almost like a baritone sound, then you have the bass, which is a baritone bass.
Okay.
I mean, in simple terms, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're getting a little musical education.
Yes,
classical
I am.
Musical education. So what I hear you saying, Leigh, is that when a composer is writing the score,
yes,
he has to tailor it to each instrument.
Exactly. And
that is some deep work.
I don't know if you've ever seen a director's music when he's directing a symphony or something like that. It
mm-hmm.
is monumental. You know, you can't make a heads or tails out of it because it's so huge.
Complicated.
But
he can.
But, of course,
it
represents each section, each instrument, and whatever. So,
mm-hmm.
In other words, like if you just came up with a song, you would have it scored, and you're the composer, and you would have it scored for if you're gonna use a song in an orchestra, or if it's just a choral scoring you want. You
mm-hmm.
know, people do that sort of thing, and for instance, we're talking about oratorios. Well, oratorios normally, the chorus usually sings in what they call SABT, four parts.
Mhm.
Yeah, and so it goes even with the instruments.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I suppose it takes really a lot of talent and passion and commitment to write, to compose. Which the composer writes the score.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons why these composers will not stay where they were born. They will go elsewhere for whatever reason, and a lot of times it's just solitude.
Ah,
you know? Yeah.
Takes a lot of me time, I suppose, as they say now. Now I want to talk about a female. Her name is N-E-R-I-N-E, Noreen Barrett.
Barrett.
You know her?
I know of her.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. She was born in Jamaica, it doesn't say when, and studied piano in London. She won a prize in Naples and at the Young Concert Artists Auditions in New York. Barrett also won the Mozart Memorial Prize in London and the first Michaels Award in New York. I suppose I don't know what Michaels Award is, but there's just one sheet on her. She gave her widely noted debut recital at London's Wigmore Hall and New York Carnegie Recital Hall in 1966. She has played with many prestigious orchestras, including the London Symphony, the BBC Symphony, the Royal Philharmonic, the English Chamber Orchestra, the London Mozart Players, the New York Philharmonic, the Boston Symphony, the Chicago Symphony, and it goes on and on and on. Among the distinguished conductors she has performed under are Sir John Gray. I mean, the names just go on and on and on. Now, how do you know about her? And by the way, did you tell your listeners who you are and where you're calling from?
Oh, this is Annette Scott from Atlanta, Stone Mountain, Atlanta.
Oh, welcome again, Annette. How do you know about her?
I've known of her ever since I lived in Jamaica, but I don't know much about her. I just remember her name as one of the celebrated musicians from Jamaica.
Yes, yes, yes. And it's funny because there's not a lot of information on her as a Jamaican.
Mm-mm.
But, I mean, she's quite current. And she now is a professor in Germany.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's in Germany as a music professor. That's where she is.
Okay.
So I thought that was, and you know, with all of these places and that she has performed, I don't know a lot about all the classics. Leigh, have you heard of her before?
No, I'm sorry to say.
Ah, well, she's quite accomplished and quite apparently a performer.
Mm-hmm.
Got credentials, I can see that.
Yes, yes, yes.
But
so
you know,
with that, pardon?
Most of the people that you speak about, including the previous one, the Jewish fellow, they, you know, in order to get on the world stage, you have to be qualified, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into these orchestras and when you direct these orchestras, not even to mention the composing of the piece.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the composing of the piece, and for somebody to interpret or play a piece, you have to impress somebody, you know, and
right.
and to get into these orchestras, you have to be well qualified.
Well, it just shows you that Hello. You know the talent is everywhere. We just have an abundance of it in Jamaica, I would say, or abundance that have matured. A lot of these people are not really known as Jamaicans, or Jamaicans never know. A lot of Jamaicans don't know about them, but they've certainly made an impact all over the world. Now, how about Eleanor Alberga? Anybody ever heard of her?
I've never heard of her.
Okay, well, she's quite current. And here is a little review here. It says, it is rare in the world of contemporary music for a composer to be called back to the stage three times by an enthusiastic audience after the first performance of a work. But that was the reception accorded Eleanor Alberga at the premiere of her new violin concerto. Leigh, have you heard of this person? And this was an article that was written in the Times on December 2001. So it's quite current.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Just amazing. She has established herself in the mainstream of British contemporary music and enjoys an international reputation as a composer. Her music has been performed by many leading orchestras, including the London Philharmonic, the Royal Philharmonic, and it goes on, the Mozart Players, similar to what I read before for the other, you know, artists, but just in Australia, in South America, in China, in Canada, in Europe. She was the first composer to be commissioned for the inaugural Festival of Women in Music. She was also invited to participate in the prestigious Composer to Composer Festival in Colorado, USA, and was a featured composer at the Vale of Glamorgan Festival in 2001. Huh.
How old is she, Margaret?
It doesn't say. It doesn't say how old she is. But I Googled her, and she looks like she would be in her 50s.
In 1949.
Beg your pardon?
She was born in 1949.
Ah, okay. So I was close.
Yeah. So
oh, my goodness.
61.
Beg your pardon?
She's 61.
Oh, yeah. Well, she must, it must have been a younger version, but she, if that is a current picture, she looks great. So, I mean, it's fascinating. I was just fascinated by the discovery of all these people, both past and current, but mostly for the current ones, because they are performing, composing, and being involved as we speak.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that, you know, I've been to the symphony and all. I'm sure that perhaps we have heard some of her pieces and didn't know that she's the composer. But no, certainly they always have the name of the composers. So we'll be looking out for those names, right?
yeah,
right,
well,
Annette?
Because I've not heard of those names in Jamaica. In
right.
Leigh, I don't know of Leigh. What is his name?
The point is that if you've heard an artist, you would, or if you didn't hear them, but they used one of their pieces, you would see on the back of your you know, your, what do you call it, the thing there, the program,
mm-hmm.
the credits. This is one of the things in music. You have to put the credits of whoever composed the music.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. But listen to this. She, in 2001, it was the turning point as she chose to give up her career as a concert pianist. She was a pianist before, and concentrate full time on her composition. She completed her violin concerto and was awarded a Nesta Fellowship. The major award enabled her to further develop and experiment with her cosmopolitan techniques and ideas. Huh. Her route to cosmopolitan has not been an orthodox one. Oh, I see here. She was born in 1949 in Kingston, Jamaica, and she began her musical career deciding at the age of 5 to be a concert pianist and also started composing short pieces for herself. In 1970, she won an Associate Board Scholarship, but that supported her studies at the Royal Academy of Music in London. We're talking as late as 1970, Annette. Mm-hmm. At various times, a member of the Jamaica Folk Singers, an African dance company, and later pianist and music director of London Contemporary Dance Theatre, she draws from a richly diverse musical background. Drama is an integral component. Her music often describes a tremendous and her moves is often described as tremendously excited and accessible. That is how her compositions are described. Oh, my goodness.
But I don't think, I've left Jamaica a long time, but for some reason, we have not embraced a lot of these persons.
Really? That is what I say to Annette.
Performances.
Uh-huh. It's the now Jamaica, what is happening in Jamaica. I don't say that for everybody, but I think that, and even foreigners have the impression that, some of them may have the impression that every Jamaican only like and only want to hear reggae and, you know, calypso and all of that. But I remember distinctly that when I was a teenager or a young person in Jamaica, we had a philharmonic orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that, Leigh?
Yes.
Okay, because I asked some people and they don't. Well, I don't know what part of the island they grew up, but I know in Kingston we had a philharmonic orchestra.
Well, you know, when we're talking classical music, a lot of people they may like classical music, but it's not like they're hearing folk music, Jamaican folk music or anything like that. And it usually is not as popular. You know, when I came to this country, we had about 4 classical radio stations in New York. Now we're down to 2 up to 5 years ago. Now we're down to 1. WQXR, and WQXR just lost their site, their station, you know, the
transmission privileges.
Yes, and they're gone to a Spanish location. Can you imagine the premier classical station in New York?
Mm.
So it's small wonder that you may or may not have heard of these people. And a lot of times, take this girl, Lilberga, now. She started out as a concert pianist. What usually happens with artists who aspire to be composers is they stop performing and devote most of their lives to composing.
Okay.
That's how it works. I mean, a lot of the great... Take, maybe you'll know Andre Previn.
Mm-hmm.
Bad name. He bowed out of performing as a pianist. He's a great pianist from Germany. He started to compose, and that's all he did for the rest of his life. So, mm-hmm. if it if it wasn't Andre Previn, you would never know of him anymore, you know, unless you go to some event and you see his name under the credits as the composer.
Right.
So
But I think what Anish is trying to say is that as a country and a culture, I think it's good to embrace all of the musical
of course
talents and attributes. You know, you don't have to. I mean, one is always going to be the dominant, or more than one. Like in this country, you know, country music is still very popular. And if you listen to country music, the lyrics and all of that, it hasn't changed much. The music itself, you know, how the music sound because of the technology might be different, but the creation, the words, the stories are quite similar to what they were 30 and 40 years ago.
Yeah.
They have improved other parts of it, but they have not thrown it out, you know, and modernized it beyond what you could recognize it for what it is.
Yeah, my only point was that classical music...
I have to leave you guys, so good night.
Thank you for joining us, Annette.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you, Annette.
Interesting listening to
the
discussion.
Well, thank you, and come back often. Walk good and come back soon.
Okay, take care.
Yeah.
Take care.
Bye
now.
Bye-bye.
Right. No,
but
apparently,
this woman, Alberga, is quite now, because, you know, she composes contemporary-type music.
Yeah.
And she's in quite a demand and commissioned by different, you know, orchestras all over the world to compose special things for them.
I just wanted to make the distinction of classical versus, let's say, pop.
And oh, yes.
Fact, what I mentioned before about the classical music waning in New York, it's the same thing. People don't listen to the classical music much anymore, you know?
Hmm.
Well,
are you talking about New York per se, or certain parts of New York? Because I know the Philharmonic and all of that is still there and apparently flourishing. No?
Well, look, I use New York as an example, but this is what's happening throughout the country.
Oh, I got you.
The classical music, they have to put their backs against a grindstone to keep going because, number one, it's so expensive to produce,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yet, I would say, and this is not a plug, my oratorio is doing Mozart Requiem for our spring concert. And we are virtually sold out, 875 seats.
Well, that's amazing. I mean, there's still, the point I'm trying to make is that, and perhaps there's still a section of the residents in Jamaica that adhere to or listen to or like classical music. But the general feeling, especially of most foreigners, is that every Jamaican know the other Jamaican. You know that. You know, oh, you're from Jamaica. Do you know so-and-so, such a person?
Yeah.
But also that every Jamaican love reggae, or every Jamaican love dancehall or whatever. You know, that is right across the board.
Right.
And I think...
stereotyping, that's all.
Right. Nothing could be further from the truth. So it was interesting to see that that Dr. Dox, right?
Yes.
When he spoke about Felstead, talked about the fact that most Jamaicans, or most people, not Jamaicans necessarily, think of Jamaica and music, and the first thought that would come to them is Bob Marley.
Yeah.
Because that is the music that most people around the world know, which is great music. But there are other musicians and artists that are Jamaican, born and raised there. A lot of them are educated musically in other places, but they originated in Jamaica, and especially in this woman's case, Alberga. I mean, she was in Jamaica until recently. You know, we're talking about the singers and dancers that I mentioned she was associated with. So there's still a segment of a whole lot of talent of different levels and different disciplines that are being born, I think, as we speak. I was reading something the other day about somebody, some kid in Jamaica with some musical talent. I'll have to see where I park that, because I you know, I'm researching one thing and I find something else, and I think it's interesting to me, so I put it some place, and I must go look it up. But there were two things I wanted to point out before we run out of time. First of all, I want to thank all the listeners for being with me, and I hope you've enjoyed our segment on classical music and bringing to life some of these people that you might never have heard of before. There are several of them that are still current. I mean, they're performing in operas and in orchestras all over the world. And we're going to be talking about some more of them as we go along. But I forgot the point I was trying to make. But I want to thank everybody for being so loyal and being here with me. And I want to encourage you to go in the archives and research some of the shows that might be of interest to any of your friends and family. And you can always send that particular show to them by just highlighting the URL in your address bar and send them that link. Or you can ask them to go to Google and just Google Backyard Labrish Blog Talk Radio. When they get on Blog Talk Radio, type in Backyard Labrish and they will get to the site. But better yet, they can send me their email and I'll put them on the list so that they can know the shows that we're doing ahead of time and can select the ones they want to listen to. So, Leigh, I have a hand up from 561. I'm going to open up the mic and welcome. Welcome to the Backyard Labrish. This is Margaret. Who do I have?
You have Pansy.
Hi, Miss P. How are you?
I'm sorry I'm late.
That's all right. Can you tell the world where you're calling from?
I'm calling from West Palm Beach.
Oh, well, welcome to the backyard. Are you under your favorite tree?
not really. I'm in my favorite chair.
Good. Can you feel the trade winds blowing across your face?
Oh, yes. It's nice and cool outside.
Wonderful. So what do you have to establish with us this evening?
The end of your talk about classical music. And within a certain section of the population, it's still live and well.
Wonderful.
I should add on that list of Jamaican artists, Oswald Russell, who was living in Switzerland. I think he's still there when I was there.
Still there.
He's a composer. He's a pianist. And one night I went to a concert here, and one of the artists played one of his compositions.
Uh-huh.
I was so proud that I knew him, you know.
That's my dimension.
That is wonderful.
You know, his father used to be the marriage. In Jamaica?
A marriage officer?
Registrar of births and weddings and things.
Right, the registrar, yes. Have you heard of Eleanor Alberger?
No, I haven't.
Oh, well, she's quite accomplished, and she is a recent person. She was born in 1949 in Kingston and was educated out there and all of that until she went to London. But she is an accomplished composer, being commissioned by different orchestras all over the world to write special pieces for them.
Well, when I was there, maybe she was a child.
Ah, well.
Jamaica, you know, I have a
right.
She was at school of music when I was there.
Right,
but
right.
I haven't heard of her. But there are lots of Jamaicans who are musicians, composers that we don't hear of.
Right. Well, we're doing the segment in the backyard for the next few weeks. We'll be bringing not all of them, but as many as I can to light. Because Dr. Joy Lumsden, the historian in Jamaica, has them, you know, in chronological order, or I don't know if it is, but, you know, I'm going through. We spoke about four different ones this evening, going back as far as 1742.
Well, I'll listen to it tomorrow. Because
right.
I listen to your Wednesday broadcast on Thursday.
Wonderful. Well, you know, the beauty of the technology is that you can listen to it anytime, any day of the week. It's just wonderful, and I want to thank you for sharing with us. From West Palm Beach, Miss Pansy.
Well, I'll try to be earlier next time. Wednesday's a busy evening for me.
Right, right. But just to have you participate is an honor. And we hope that you will continue to spread the word so that more people who like history and like to know new things will check us out. And for the people who might come by later, we do have a website, which is www.backyardlabrish.com. Or even if you're listening online, you can always send me a note. Let me know how you are enjoying the show. You can make suggestions for a show, because that what we do here in the backyard, we just labrish, and a labrish is not necessarily structured or we have a special format. We're just here to celebrate, enlighten, and to preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love.
All power to you, my dear. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. So with that said, Lade, my special guest, do you have a parting word?
No, I thought it was a lively discussion, and it was nice that so many people, including Miss Pansy, here came in.
Oh, hello, Leigh. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. And this is what it's all about. And people should know that Jamaicans are cultured. And we know that by the type of artists that you presented tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And it started way back when.
Right.
And still going on.
Way back when. And we hope it continues far into the future, and I hope the young generation will find some nuggets of wisdom from their elders of the past. And I know the new generation, for them it's easier to listen sometimes than to read, and I know that a lot of people don't have the time to do the research. Now that I'm retired, I can do it, and I really get a buzz from doing it. So it's my pleasure all the time to welcome you to the backyard, to help to enlighten you in some way and inspire you in some way. So I ask you to, as we would say in Jamaica, for goodbye, walk good and come back soon.
Good night.
So good night.
Good night. Good night. Thank you.